This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil, now streaming, only on Hulu.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Today's podcast is presented by Podgo. Podgo is the easiest way for you to monetize your podcast, providing podcasters with a flat rate for ad space so you always know how much you get when you include an ad from Podgo. I recently joined as a member and you can too. Apply today to become a member and immediately be connected with advertisers that fit your audience. That's podgo.co at podgo.co. And remember to include the name The Scoreless Thriller Podcast in your application. Thank you.
Man there trying to stop Drogba getting himself into further trouble. It's a fucking disgrace!
Oh, it's not a bad ball for Pelé on the right side. It's Carlos Alberto. And what a great goal that was! Carlos Alberto!
Maradona just walked away from Huddle then. Maradona. Open.
Met het balbezit voor Frank de Boer. Frank de Boer speelt de bal. Heel goed naar Dennis Bergkamp. Dennis Bergkamp. Dennis Bergkamp neemt de bal aan. Dennis Bergkamp.
Dennis Bergkamp. Dennis Bergkamp. Dennis Bergkamp. Dennis Bergkamp.
Oh! Frank de Boer speelt de bal naar Dennis Bergkamp. Die neemt de bal feilloos aan. En hij schiet de bal erin.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of the Scoreless Thriller Podcast. I'm your host, Alex, and I'm joined as always by Leon. Leon, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. Very happy to be here with you today.
And joining us on the line today is Brendan Crowley of All Sports Book Reviews Online. We're going to be covering the book, The Miracle of Castel de Sangro by Joe McInnes, and Brendan has agreed to come on the podcast. Welcome to the show, Brendan.
Hi, thanks for having me, lads.
So, yeah, I've been wanting to cover this book for a while because I think whenever I've kind of looked at lists of books which are kind of like the best football books, I always see this one near the top, and I was kind of always been kind of curious as to why it has this kind of exalted status. But before we kind of get into like the book itself and stuff, I wanted to kind of ask you a few things, Brendan, about what exactly you think makes a good sports book exactly, and maybe you can kind of flesh out like what kind of motivated you to start the blog and start writing about the reviewing the books that you'd read.
So I started the blog. I think it was after kind of 2016 election in the US. I found all the news media was so negative and so relentlessly kind of doom mongering that I stopped reading the news and was kind of found myself reading more and more sports books. And every year I'd always kind of done a list of books for friends and passed on recommendations and passed on books. And I found that I just wanted somewhere to kind of collect my thoughts, really, and keep a list to myself. So I kind of started the blog thinking no one would ever read it. But it seems like there's a small community out there of people who love sports books too. So got a reasonable bit of traction and met a good few people online who are into sports books as well. So it's been a really positive experience.
What was actually the first book you reviewed for the site?
I think I did. I reread Andre Agassi's book Open.
Oh, okay.
And Captured Thoughts there, because that was a book that I found really powerful, really kind of motivating, and just brilliant. And so I think that was the first one I put down on paper on the site.
When you are picking new sports books to read, what do you think are kind of like some of the main criteria for what you want to cover? Because I know when I try and find like new sports books to read, it's very like random. It's just like I'll listen to a podcast or like read something in a paper like, oh, that's interesting. But is there some kind of, do you think there's something that you kind of particularly look for in a good sports book story, or what is the kind of thing?
Yeah, I think there needs to be a hook. There needs to be something. If you read a description of it and you don't instantly kind of think that's something that sounds interesting, you probably won't be that interested. So it's usually either a topic that you haven't thought about, or a story that you would like to learn more, or really good writing. And if it's a writer you know is good, or that really kind of sucks you in. So usually I find it's the stuff that's not as well covered, the kind of those angles in the sporting world that you're not as aware about. Like, I wouldn't have a huge amount of interest in reading a book about Wayne Rooney, say, when you've followed everything about him, but it's more that other angle. Or else just a really good writer that you know does a really good job.
And do you find yourself just generally gravitating more towards concept books, or like away from autobiographies? Because I think in recent years there's been like kind of fatigue towards very kind of formulaic sort of footballer's autobiography, and people are kind of looking more towards like something which is a bit better story and like a bit different than just like an A to Z of sort of a player's achievements and stuff like that.
Yeah, definitely. I think I won't read an autobiography unless I see a good review somewhere, or unless I know it's someone who's had a particularly interesting life that I'd want to read about. Otherwise, they're generally kind of exercises in self-promotion as much as anything else. So I think, certainly I find what you're calling concept books would be one that I lean towards a lot more.
Yeah, and like just speaking generally, like this year, what has there been a couple of books that you've sort of really enjoyed this year? Like, what have been some of the kind of highlights of the books you've read this year?
Yeah, so I think one I just read really recently, which I think is well worth checking out, is it's called 1982 Brazil, mm-hmm. by Stuart Horsfield. It's about the 82 Brazil World Cup team that got knocked out in the quarterfinals by Italy, but that had Zico and Socrates and Tostão and Adair and all these kind of legendary players, and they just kind of set the world afire and really became kind of this team that everyone absolutely loved. And then all of a sudden got knocked out in the quarterfinals. So by Brazilian standards, failed. And so the book's, I think, subtitled is The Glorious Failure. So it really is something that it's a celebration of the team and I suppose the way they played. But it's as much a kind of personal book about the author's kind of the joy of the World Cup when you're a kid. So that World Cup that you run home from school and you get to watch these unbelievable players that you didn't really know about. So it just really what's really good about the team, it's as much about, I suppose, the joy of watching football as a kid, and particularly international football, which I really love.
Yeah, we covered the game between Brazil and Italy from that World Cup, and like the game where they got knocked out, and I think we watched the game back, and even like watching it back now is just like so kind of the way they played is kind of very iconic, and also the kind of like style and very aura around it. And then also, like, I think, like, the mystique is also added, just the fact that they lost. Like, there was kind of, like, almost the story of, like, the tragic failure.
Yeah, we talked about this, right, that it's bittersweet and that this just adds to the story and makes it somewhat more appealing even, yeah.
Yeah, you kind of feel if they won, they would have been kind of, oh, they're the second best Brazilian team to win the World Cup. They would have always been in the shadow of the 1970 team. But by becoming the best team not to win the World Cup, they kind of create this other legacy. And it kind of creates a more endearing story almost, and like, because from, I suppose, most of us, only one team wins the World Cup, only one team wins the league, only one team wins the cup. Most fans, your team loses, and it's a much more relatable maybe experience.
Yeah, no, exactly. We kind of if you speak about the World Cup, I think there's sort of like a trinity of sort of like the most beautiful players. So you have like the Hungary team in 1954, then you have the Netherlands team in 74, and then you have the Brazil team in 82, and those three teams are kind of remembered far more than, like, if you think about some of the more fondly than a lot of the kind of World Cup winners that we've had, especially in like the last recent decades as well.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I totally agree with that. Like, if you look at Brazil 2002. No one can, about Ronaldo, it's almost hard to remember who else was in the team. They really just didn't capture any imagination.
Except for the Germans, they do remember.
Sorry, Leon is German, so
yeah, again, this is first World Cup I followed very intensely, and it was just dramatic.
I'll always maintain that Ireland could have won that World Cup.
I think we always do say that Ireland could have won the World Cup if you know, because we always say, well, if we'd beaten Spain in the shootout. But if we'd beaten Spain in the shootout, then we would have South Korea.
And then we were just as good as Germany.
Yeah. Shouldn't we beat them a couple of years ago? So
well, yeah, we didn't have Bollock in the final, so that was our downfall. Yeah.
So do people send you books now at this stage to get you to try and review them?
So I get offered a fair few. So I only try and take them if they're ones I want to read, because I don't want to do negative reviews. If I don't like a book, I tend to just not review it. Whereas if I've accepted a book from a publisher or an author, you try and review it. Now, I think it's probably a few I got that I never got to, but generally you try and so generally I only try and take them if they're ones I want to read, or if, particularly if they're new authors or kind of someone that I might follow on Twitter who seems to have good insight. So it is a bit weird. It was weird when people would email me and say, would you like some free books, which was a pleasant surprise. I had no idea that happened. It shows how little I knew about book world. But there's a few publishers who I'd read a fair few of their books, and they'd usually send them to me. So it is a nice perk. But I tend to give them away then after and try and pass them around.
Yeah.
Do you know, if you were to write a book yourself about football, do you know a topic you'd pick? Or is that kind of too hypothetical?
Yeah, no, there was two topics I was thought about. One was Italian 90 from an Irish perspective, until I found that it had been written, this book called Days of Heaven by Declan Lynch, which was just about what Italian 90 meant in Ireland at the time and what it was like. And he captured it so well. I think that book's been written now. The other topic, there's a real lack of an English language book on. It's something in Italian football in the early 90s, whether it's about Sacchi's Milan team or whether it's about the kind of Magnificent Seven kind of clubs that all had unbelievable players, unbelievable teams, and won multiple Champions Leagues and UEFA Cups. But there's definitely a gap in the English language writing on kind of early 90s, mid-90s Serie A, when it was the league. And I think, obviously, any of us growing up in Britain and Ireland had Football Italia on Channel 4, and it just became this. It was my obsession at the time. We just watched Italian football as much as possible. There was no live. I had no access to Premiership games, so it was Italian games. So I love to see more English language writing on that. So I think that's my. If we win the lottery, that was my.
Sounds like an awesome project.
Spend a year learning Italian, interview everyone, and write that book. That would be the one that I'd love to see.
Yeah, you mean you could just like try and copy the Joe McGinnis formula and
the approach, yeah, especially the learning Italian part. It's very satisfying.
And is there any books coming out in the around Christmas or into the new year that you're sort of particularly keeping an eye on or want to like looking forward to getting your hands on?
Yeah, so I did a Twitter thread the other day. I do one each year the last few years of kind of books coming out, and there's about 50 on the list at this stage. So I think there's a couple that jump out. Simon Cooper, who wrote Football Against the Enemy, is doing a book on Barcelona coming out later in the year, which all of his books are brilliant and well worth reading. There's one on the Dutch team, actually, it's similar to the Brazil team. It's one by Gary Tacker. On it's called Beautiful Bridesmaids Dressed in Orange, about the Dutch kind of unfulfilled glory. Let me see, there's a couple others that jump out.
It's a brilliant there. Title.
Yeah, I love the title.
There's a few boxing books that look really good. A company, Hamilcar Publications, do brilliant boxing books, and they have a few. There's one on Hagler Hearns on kind of the two of the four kings, their three round fight that kind of was one of the best ones you'll ever watch. And if you go back on YouTube and have a look at it. There's one other that I'm trying to remember. Oh yeah, there's one about, it's called The Fix, by a guy called James Dixon, about the first Champions League. It's a year where Marseille were caught up in kind of match fixing scandal and kind of the corruption around the early Champions League, which I don't really know a huge amount about, but it looks like a really interesting book as well. So there's a whole list of, on my Twitter feed of about 50 odd books coming out, all the ones which are ones I'd like to read next year if I got them or got my hands on them.
Are there any sort of like sports covered in books that you've tried to read but you just can't, like maybe something to do with the sport itself, or you just can't quite grasp the topic, or just like they just don't, like even though you've tried to read them, just don't quite grab you? Because like, I mean, just for me personally, I think sometimes I don't really watch tennis much, so when I ever try and read like tennis books, I just couldn't quite sort of get into them. Or also like same with like Formula One, where the sport just kind of doesn't grab me.
I have a weird aversion, for an Irish person, I have a weird aversion to books on Gaelic games, on Irish hurling or Gaelic football. And there's obviously loads turned out in Ireland every year. And I just somehow they don't grab me. And I'd watch a bit of sport, but the books just don't seem to, I don't know why, they never seem to click with me. I'm trying to think generally, tennis, there haven't been too many tennis books that I've read and really gotten into. Either so it seems to be like football and the big American sports seem to have the main ones, but I don't know if there's any, if I'd say it's about a particular sport or it's just I haven't found the right books that have gripped me.
Let's move on to our kind of main discussion on the Miracle of Castel de Sangro. So for anyone who doesn't know anything about the book, so the book follows Joe McInnes, who was an American political writer who was a new convert and enthusiast to football. Enthusiast maybe is putting like a, I don't know, underemphasizing it. So he hears the story of this team, Castel de Sangro, which is from this very, very small town in the Abruzzo region.
Yeah.
Abruzzo. Yeah, from the Abruzzo region, who have miraculously reached the heights of Serie B. And he decides, after falling in love with football from the 94, like the USA 94 World Cup, so he decides to follow them, move over from the States to Italy, speaking zero Italian, and follow the team for a year, and somehow it just like this story ends up having like everything in it. Brendan, can you remember from like when you read the book the first time what kind of grabbed you about it, or why do you think it kind of had that kind of effect?
You'll start even earlier, like what was the hook? Because you talked earlier about if you want to read a book, like you want to have something that sparks your interest. What sparked your interest with this book? Why did you start reading it?
Yeah, so I think I picked it up because it was something I hadn't seen anything about, and I'd read some of the American kind of books that covered where someone would go in and like John Feinstein would go in and cover a sports team, but I didn't really see many football books that were like that. I think Italian football always fascinated me. I definitely played like Serie C on Championship Manager back in the day, so I'd seen the name at some point. So it was a kind of a mix of things like that. So I read it. It wasn't long out. I think it was probably only out a year when I read it, and I think it was probably 17 or 18, and I just found it fascinating. It just totally gripped me. I think I was jealous of the idea of going over to Italy and following a team, and so the idea of the book really appealed to me, and then was, as I said, was blown away then when I started reading it.
Yeah, I think for me, when I started reading the book, what kind of like grabbed me and made me want to just keep reading more and more and faster is the kind of way that he writes and how he's sort of able to bring characters and the place alive, right, Leon?
Yeah, I completely agree. And we discussed this earlier because I think it's very interesting Especially in comparison to a lot of, to the other football book that we've read, it sometimes seems nearly sociological. So he has a very interesting way of describing the village where he arrives, the people that he interacts with, and this adds a lot of depth, I think, to the whole description. And that's something that immediately sucks you into this story, and then it just brings you towards the football layer later on, I think. So that was really nice, I thought.
Yeah, yeah. So the sort of prologue chapter sees him on a train in Milan, and he meets this major, right? And then this major is football obsessed, so he goes to watch this Milan game with him. And then
he watches this Milan game with this major, this stranger that he meets, and he's devastated because Milan actually ends up losing this game. And then he says this major character says that this lists among the calamities that has happened in the last year, just right next to his childhood house getting flooded and his senior mum ending up in an elderly home. So it kind of shows you how football crazy, what a football maniac this person is.
Yeah, yeah. So Milan lose the game, and then the major just leaves the flat, and then just he doesn't leave. Like, he just writes him a message saying, "I'm besotted with sadness over this result," and just leaves him a note and just leaves the flat for 3 days.
Yeah.
And that gives you kind of a bit of a window into like what McGuinness is kind of trying to uncover, and also like show is the sort of fanaticism for football in Italy, and also like show bits of the culture. But yeah, so he, like, McGuinness ends up in the village in Castel de Sangro, and there's just like so much goes on between in the season. I know there's so many like characters which he brings to life, but I think what really I really enjoyed is how sort of he makes these matches between these, like, which he describes as these very sort of not particularly beautiful, like, small cities and towns in Italy, and then their games against Castel de Sangro, and like how, and he drums them up, and he gets drums them up, and then you at the end, like towards the game, you end up feeling like, oh, this is the biggest match in history, you know, like Castel de Sangro against Bari or something, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, and then I guess my question also to you, Brendan, would be, because as I already said, that especially the people that are described and kind of even the landscape, but also the social environment where McGuinness is in, all of this was very vivid, I felt like, in the description. But then sometimes when he described the matches, I think you could maybe tell that he was not as experienced maybe as some other authors in this genre. And so I wanted to ask you, do you think him having somewhat of an outsider expected, because he's a very new fan of football, do you think that added, or what do you think it added also to his description of his year in Italy, and what were the downsides of this maybe?
Yeah, I suppose it's more about, it really became more about fanaticism than it became about football. Football was kind of the vehicle that he got hooked on, but it was more about being hooked on something and kind of getting wrapped up in the town and the fanaticism within the town. So, like, he clearly didn't have... There's often, you can tell when it's an American who doesn't know much about football, writing about football, there's a particular style, and it very much read like that. So, but it became all about the result, and I think what you found when you're reading it was really, you were reading about the match to get the result as much as... Because you kind of... The way he wrote about it and the fanaticism he brought sucked you into the game and into the team. So I think... being an outsider probably helped in some ways. They didn't get bogged down in some of the nuances, and his kind of his own tactical ideas weren't the most well developed, I suppose, at the best of times. So it became less and less about the intricacy of football. It does broaden it out and open it up to a wider audience. Like, I gave the book, I remember after reading it, I gave it to my dad, who has no interest in football whatsoever, but it would have known Joe McGuinness, and would have been interested, oh, you're reading the Joe McGuinness book. And he would have enjoyed the book without having any particular knowledge of football. So I think it does make it a different book than if it had been someone with an intricate kind of tactical insight trying to bring that out as well.
But I think also, on the other hand, I think you mentioned in your review that, like, when you went back and reread the book, I think, like, when you were no longer sort of in your late teens and stuff, his sort of personality and how he sort of... forced himself always to, like, the center of the story, it rubs up against you far more than it did back then.
Yeah, I somehow missed it when I first read it. I I somehow didn't, it didn't dawn on me, I suppose, or it didn't bother me how much this was about him and his experience and his kind of sense of he knew what was right and his moral kind of crusade and all that. For some, I think when I first started, I got totally wrapped up in the story and what was going to happen and these people and this kind of the life in the village and the team, and I got wrapped up in it. It was only when I went back and read it a couple of years ago that I really couldn't get over how much it was about him. And he didn't come across as a particularly likable guy, yet somehow with a weird endearing charm that made people like him eventually.
Mm.
So it was kind of like throwing tantrums at officials and kind of picking fights and all this kind of stuff, which definitely, I think, when reading it with a more critical eye, I kind of found, God, I don't think I'd want to have spent much time in his company.
Yeah.
Whereas I somehow totally missed that the first time. I don't know how I missed it, but I think certainly the first read of it, I really didn't pay attention to him. It was more about everything else going on around him.
Yeah, but what do you think has changed? Is it that you've become a more critical reader, or is it just you reading this book for the second time? Or is there anything else that explains this new reading of the story?
I was thinking about that. I'm not sure. Partly, I think, just being a bit older and a bit more cynical in the world, which is a sad thing to admit.
We're all more cynical.
Yeah. Still like the ideologists here, the young.
Yeah, and so I think of partly that. Partly it might be because I was less... There was no nerves, I suppose, about what happened. The tension is... When you reread something, the tension is reduced. So maybe when you take out the kind of tension of how will this season go, maybe I was more critical, and maybe because I read it after setting up the blog, so I would have thought occasionally, what would I say about it? So maybe the act of reviewing changes the experience of reading, which could explain it as well.
Yeah, I think for me, his the nature of his sort of being an outsider, and also his kind of naivety about the world of Italian football, which he inserts himself into. For me, I think it's both the strength of the book and also like a weakness, right? Because I think the way that he's sort of like, he's obviously got this newfound fanaticism and stuff, and like the way he writes about that, I'm not sure a more kind of seasoned football writer or someone could quite capture that the way he does. But then also the way he reacts to certain things, I think, demonstrates his kind of lack of knowledge or preview or like background research on the sort of area and also football culture. I mean,
yeah, I think I agree. It's like maybe the football puberty. he still feels everything very strongly, the highs and the lows, and it's not very mature. But yeah, I think that there's a lot of value to be found in this, and I think it builds also throughout the story. Right at the beginning, it's more of a perspective of just someone who's not part of the community, but then he gets more and more involved, and he also feels more and more strongly about the wrongdoings that are going on as the story develops.
Yeah, I think we should probably preface this bit with a kind of spoiler alert, so if you don't want the ending of the book to be spoiled for you, then just skip the rest of this this bit of a discussion. But Castel Sangro have maintained their survival, so they're going into the last game and it's a dead rubber, where they had the big finale the game before where they were able to stave off relegation. And then the last game they play against Bari, who need a win to go up. And so it's kind of prearranged basically that the game will end 3-1, and Joe overhears, so he before he goes on the trip to the game, he one of the players comes up to him who's unnamed, and he says, Joe, I've loved being on this journey with you, but please don't come to the last game. And he ignores the advice and overhears some of them at the poolside kind of discussing what the result of the game must be, that Bari must win 3-1 and they have to score to make it not look too bad. And he obviously loses his shit over this.
I mean, he does, yeah.
He loses his shit basically over this, and it's like calling them all cowards and just like shouting at them, and feels this very personal betrayal over it. And then the game happens, and obviously it's 3-1 result. And you kind of, the book ends on a very sad note, because all these players who he's very clearly kind of built this very strong kind of personal relationship, he knows that he can kind of never go back to the town because he's like shouting at all the people and like shouting at the, he writes something on the coach's door about like how shameful the act was, and how, you know, how betrayed he feels by the actions of the coach and also of the town and everything, and the president and stuff.
Yeah. And the so-called society.
Yeah.
It does its shady business in the background and definitely had its hands in this whole thing. So he's definitely a persona non grata.
Yeah, yeah. So it's all ended, all this beautiful relationship is ended. But my kind of point is, like, if he'd kind of known a bit more about Italian football or anything beforehand, he might have maybe not reacted the same way, right? If, like, Bregman, and if he'd kind of been a little bit more worldly or knowledgeable about football, then he wouldn't have been quite had this reaction to it. Or what was your kind of reading of the situation?
Yeah, I think if you think of who McGuinness was at the time, he was an award-winning writer who had written about Nixon. Like, he knew about corruption in a way, in an in-depth kind of manner, and he understood the world as it is rather than how you kind of want it to be. But I think for him, football was this kind of escape, was this magical thing that was better than the world and better than everything else. So I think he had this deeply personal kind of near meltdown when it was kind of revealed to him what football was really like, and what that it was part of the world that he'd been from. It wasn't this magical kind of escape. But when I read it at kind of 17, 18, I agreed with him. I kind of felt a bit betrayed myself. I kind of thought, God, this wonderful story and this terrible ending, and it definitely was a kind of made me upset or made me sad that it had gone this way. But I have to say, reading it back now again with more cynical kind of worldview on it, what struck me this time was just the absolute lack of empathy and the realization that the victims here are the players who are put in this position. It's, there's no, the least victim in the whole thing is McGuinness.
Yeah,
is the person who's going on the journey with them. But it's really the players who really have to have no choice here and are kind of caught up in this kind of corruption and this world. And that, I suppose, a more rational writer or a person in a more rational state of mind would have picked up on that. But it would have been a very different book if it was a kind of an objective account. It wasn't. It was very. The book is a personal, subjective account. And I suppose the positive side of McGuinness's fanaticism and passion that sucks you in, the downside of that is his response at the end, but he doesn't come across well from it.
But then again, I mean, my question then would be, what do you think, how would you have reacted in that situation? I mean, you follow around this team for a year and you build up relationship and trust and hope and all of this. And I mean, of course, yeah, take a step back, don't think that you're the center of the attention all the time. But beyond that, how do you react when this then happens?
Yeah, I think you have to decide. I think you have to decide whether you write the book or not, and whether, if you can't, there's a choice of whether you write the book and include it, or you don't write the book, or you write the book and not include it. And I think he would have needed to come to terms with that. But I think at the time, I would like to think that I would have been more empathetic towards the people experiencing and having to make this choice and then to reflect on it.
Yeah.
As opposed to kind of blowing up and seeing them. I think he wanted them to be all things good in the world and see them as these kind of heroes that he could admire and look up to, as opposed to people who were more human and more real.
Yeah, I think because his relationship is so pure with football, like you say. And then, so, like, the book ends with this kind of breakdown of a relationship between him and the players and stuff. And I feel like it ends in this very, very... I came away from the book feeling very kind of sad. Like, I felt very such a kind of let down in that, you know, a few chapters earlier, he painted the beautiful picture of everyone kind of celebrating staying up in the division, and, you know, everyone's kind of, because they've obviously carried all this, also the memory of the two players who died, and then it ends with this absolute kind of sadness of him, like, you know, he's gone, like, left town. And he look, also, were you as surprised as I was kind of about the ending, about, like, that was the ending, was his burning the bridges with everyone there?
Yeah, I'm surprised he mentioned it. I think I would have thought that if that had happened, that he would have turned a blind eye and he would have seen that this was a story that he could tell in a particular way, and that he might have of kind of hinted at it, or he might have found some way of not putting it as abruptly. But I think because his reaction was so severe at the time, he didn't have that option left. So yeah, there's a sadness that someone, like, he had this incredible life experience, and there's a version of it where he could have had these friends for life. He could have been spending his summers holidaying there. He could have been a really rich, rewarding kind of part of his life. And he threw it away in some ways by the way he reacted. But I think because the fairy tale had been shattered, maybe he never could have gone back anyway. Maybe he never could have forgiven them, rather than them not being able to forgive him afterwards. So it's one of those things where when relationships like that break down, it's sad, but it's part of the strength of, I suppose, in nonfiction books, it's stories that happen as opposed to stories that you craft. So in some ways, it's a truer reflection of the world. It kind of shatters the fairy tale illusion, which happens, I suppose, more often than not in sports. So it adds a depth and a kind of it adds a something to the book that it goes beyond just this fairy tale story and becomes a kind of a, I think as a reader, you kind of realize you can get caught up in the story too, and then your own expectations and hopes and are shattered too. So it gives the book a kind of a truism or realism that helps it step up a level, and it does add to its status as a classic, I think.
Yeah, no, I think you're right, right? Because I think if the book ends two chapters earlier with them celebrating their survival in the vision, then it's like, oh, it's a great story, you know, it's a happy story. But then it's like, then this bit comes on in the end, and it just sort of, in some ways, tears up everything which has come up previously, right, Leon?
It's bittersweet again.
Yeah.
Like we discussed earlier. But also my question was, I mean, I completely agree that the way he approached, especially the players afterwards, was questionable. But then again, I do think that someone who writes about football and also his experience in Italian football, doesn't he carry the responsibility to also point out these shortcomings of the sport?
I think it depends if you think of the book as journalism or as not journalism. I do think there's a difference between non-fiction sometimes and pure journalism. So it's whether you wanted the readers to come away with a good understanding, or you wanted to tell a story about a town and a time, because all nonfiction is subjective and put through the lens of the author. So I assume everything I read that there's hidden truths, there's things beneath us. If you look at the official history of anything, is always not what happened, but the way people remember it and the way people choose to remember it. So in some ways, I suppose it is admirable that he showed the truth as he experienced it. But what it does bring out at the end is you realize that there was other things going on behind the scenes all along. And all you can ever get from a book is the truth as the author experiences it. So I don't know, would it have been any less authentic if you left it out ultimately, because you always only get some bit of the story. I don't know if you've ever worked in an area, if you ever work in an area that gets covered in the press, you'll very quickly see how little of what's in the media is reality, and not through any desire of journalists to mislead, but through just, if you're not, through the, you only ever see one side of perspective, or only some part of the actors involved will be talking to the journalists. So I don't think it's any less. I don't think he has responsibility, as it's not a work of journalism. But I do think he probably made the only choice he could make because of how he reacted. It would have become an untrue story if he didn't express his own reaction, because the whole rest of the book was about his experience and his reaction.
Yeah. And I think at least his ambition was to give a truthful account of the experiences and the miracle of the Castel di Sangro football team, right? So even though it was not pure journalism, and I completely agree here, he does had like some kind of idea of having a truthful account that shows the different perspectives on this. And I mean, what I found interesting was that he conveyed that he was angry with the players and that he burned the bridges, as Alex said. But me as a reader, I didn't go out of this blaming the players at all. Because what he also does throughout the book is he shows how there is this eminence crise.
The lesser theatre.
Exactly, Mr. Retzer, who himself works in a network. Which is very much involved in the whole story of the football team, but also of this match fixing event and all of this. So, but also with the life in the town in general. So I feel like even this part at the end kind of fits very neatly into the whole story that is portrayed, namely that it's one of a lovely city where there's a lot of social interaction and social bonding, but also where there's some shady business going on left and right.
Yeah, no, I think the strength of the book is, like I say, is that how it brings to life, I think. Like, what I really just, when I think about the book, and when I read it again, like, go back to thinking about the book, the images I'll get will be sort of, like, how he paints the picture of the team always having the dinner together in the pizzeria, like, every lunchtime, and, like, the characters and stuff, and also how Giacconi, like, also, like, sort of, like, crazy coach Giacconi, whose only English phrase he knows is bulldozer, and it's just like the characters within it and stuff, and I'll remember that stuff far more than any of the kind of descriptions that McGuinness may have had of like the football matches, which were some often quite limited. And also, like you said before, our viewing of the story is purely through his perspective. So for all, like, all the way through the book, he's always talking about how one of the goalkeepers, Julius, is shit and terrible, and how the one that he likes, Lottie, is amazing. But I mean, for all we know, that he could have just had a terrible perspective on which was the better goalkeeper. Like, it's all purely like, maybe it's driven by driven by his perspective. So I can understand how, like Brendan said, that there can be too much of his perspective in the story, right? So that, you know, sometimes if he'd sort of drawn back some of his opinions from the book, then maybe it would have had a more overall view of the picture. But maybe you might not have got quite a sort of like iconic or maybe like a memorable view on what's going on.
I think
any book like that is more than people kind of think at times. It's about the combination of the story and the author. And particularly one where it's an account of something that you're witnessing, as opposed to kind of historical research or going back and looking at things. And it's very much, I think, the book is iconic and is a classic because of the combination. I think if someone else had gone on and watched the team, you could have had a very interesting story and a very good book, but you would have had a different book. And this one has resonated with people and kind of survived the test of time. So the combination worked for good or bad. It definitely worked.
If a friend of yours came to you and was like, oh, I'm thinking of reading this book, would you still like absolutely recommend that they would read it, or would you also have some reservations about still like telling you have to read it?
100% recommend. It's an experience, and it's, as you said at the start, I think Leon said, it's so vivid and colourful, and even just as a book about Italy and about the region, and you can even having read it maybe 2-3 years ago last time, you can picture the meals, you can picture the people. It's a really good piece of writing, from a narrative sense, a descriptive sense. So it's well worth reading. I think anyone would get something from it, even if you come away at the end disliking McGuinness or being frustrated. You'll find it as a really interesting reading experience.
Yeah, no way. I think we both agree from what our experience of reading it is. So I think that brings everything that we wanted to discuss on the book to the end. Thanks a lot for joining us on the podcast, Brendan.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, and I hope we can have you again another time. It would be good.
Yeah, so definitely keep up the good work. I listened back to a good few of the episodes, and they're really enjoyable. So keep up the good work, lads.
Cheers. Bye bye.
Podcast Network.